Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud is sponsored by the AAIE Institute for International School Leadership. Preparing educators for the unique challenge of international school leadership through online courses led by international school leaders. Learn more at AAIEinstitute.org.
Hello and welcome to the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. For the last 35 years, I've had the opportunity to learn with educators at all levels, both nationally and internationally. In each of the coming episodes, I'll explore my thoughts and my learning on a variety of topics connected to teaching, learning, and leading. Thanks for listening in.
Student success skills. Today, I'm delighted to have Dr. Thomas Hare on the podcast with us. Tom is the retired head of the New City School in St. Louis. He's currently a scholar in residence at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, and he's the author of a book titled The Formative Five. Thanks for joining us, Tom.
Hey, it's great to be here.
Tom, I'm wondering if you'd start a little bit. You had a long tenure at the New City School. You want to tell us a little about that school and your time there?
Sure, and you're really kind when you say you've had a long tenure, because that really means you're an old guy. I was a public school principal, and then for a lot of years I led the New City School, and that's an independent school in St. Louis, preschool through grade six, about 350 kids. And one of the things that set us apart for many years is we were, still are, a multiple intelligences school. And as we got into MI and looked at all the different ways that children could learn, it became real clear to all of us that the most important aspects of child's development, of a child's growth, were what Howard Gardner called the personal intelligences, intrapersonal, interpersonal. Intrapersonal meaning knowing your own strengths, being able to manage yourself, interpersonal being able to read others. And so those two, along with our belief in human diversity, really frame most of our efforts. And so when I retired from New City about 3 years ago and began to work at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, I'm now in the program helping to prepare prospective principals. One of the things I gave a great deal of thought to is what can we be doing in schools to help prepare kids for the future? And my shorthand way of saying that is that who you are is more important than what you know. And I think while all educators would really agree with that, the reality is most of our day, most of our week, most of our year is spent focusing on pretty discrete academic skills. And while kids do need those, absolutely, they need to know how to read, write, and calculate. My point is that those should be the floor, not the ceiling.
So I read some of the items on your website, Tom. And did I pull this out correctly? You see that students need that interpersonal to be successful in the world as you see it, and then they need that whole intrapersonal. Can you say equally well to be successful?
Yeah, I think that's an interrelationship, if you will. If you go back to Daniel Goleman's book, Emotional Intelligence, which really catapulted this whole issue of who you are onto the stage, he talks about inter and intra, and he refers to it as managing yourself, managing relationships. And it seems to me there's a reciprocity that as you do better in one, you do better in the other. And the bottom line for your and my purposes, talking to people who work in schools, is that developing these skills, along with the rest of the formative five, needs to be part of the regular curriculum. It can't be something that we say, oh, that's up to parents, or it happens in the church, the mosque, the synagogue. We need to say this is part of our responsibility to educate the whole child.
What I'd like to do is to name each of the five formative areas that you've chosen here. And if I did that one at a time, I'm wondering if you could kind of just give us a short definition of the term as you're using
sure.
it, and then maybe just a sentence or two about it. So the first one that I came across was empathy.
Yeah, empathy is distinct from sympathy. Empathy is not just seeing how other people feel and their perspective. It's really understanding that. It's really getting in their skin. It's feeling the emotions. And I'm often asked, gosh, you've got the formative five, which is the most important. And I say to people, they're all important. There's not a most important, semicolon, however, comma. I began with empathy for a reason. And that is because when I look around the world, I think, gosh, if we all had more empathy, it would be a whole lot better place on every issue. So empathy is something I think that we absolutely must develop with our kids. That's, again, knowing how other people see things, empathizing, understanding, and actually then taking action to help those other people.
Self-control.
Self-control is something that when I talk to educators and I often do presentations, and when I talk about the need to self-control, you can see the heads in the room nodding, because these are all people who have kids who don't have enough self-control, and that manifests itself often in not a good way in the classroom. The most interesting thing about self-control, I think, like all the other formative five, is that it can be taught, it can be developed. Too often we tend to think that, well, you know, this kid's tall, that kid's not. This kid has self-control, that kid doesn't. And it's like, hold on a second. Self-control is simply having habits. And if we are intentional about how kids form and develop habits and work with them to do that, we can increase their self-control. This issue, by the way, got lots of notoriety some time ago with Walter Mischel's marshmallow test, and probably everybody's familiar about that.
Yep.
Kids given one marshmallow, 15 minutes in a room. I come back and it's still there, you get a second one. So it's interesting that the research that Mischel did longitudinally over time showed that being able to restrain yourself from gobbling that marshmallow. And by the way, Tom Herr, I would have had that puppy pop down my throat before the guy even closed the door. But if you can restrain yourself at age four, then the longitudinal data suggests all kinds of really good positive outcomes. Now, having said that, there's been some pushback on that recently, and I think it's a healthy pushback. And people are saying, hold on a second, it's a much more complex question than that. For example, what if that four-year-old comes from a setting in which she really has learned not to trust adults? So the wise decision is to eat that marshmallow now. What if a kid is really hungry? There are some new data that suggests that, in fact, the highest correlate is socioeconomic status. Kids who come from more opulent backgrounds find it easier to wait to eat the marshmallow. And I think that's all great to keep the debate going. But the bottom line is, as every educator listening to this knows, we really need to help kids develop their self-control.
Excuse me, do strategies come in there as well?
Absolutely. In my book, I talked about that, things that teachers can do, that principals can do with kids very quickly. For example, going back to the New City School, because we believe who you are is more important than what you know, the first page of our report card we designed to focus on the intra and interpersonal intelligences, because we wanted to begin every parent-teacher conference by talking about that, rather than at the last 3 minutes before the next person comes in, you talk about her development and how he's doing. So one of my fourth grade teachers looked at those attributes, said things like confidence, motivation, self-control, work habits, appreciation for diversity. And she asked kids to rate themselves on which of these areas they felt were strong, which of these areas needed work. And then the areas that needed work became goals of theirs. We had these goals as part of parent-teacher conferences, and kids formed in like groups. So there might be a group of four kids who were working on self-control. And for them, what that meant was not fighting at recess. There might be another group in the other corner of the room of four kids who are working on self-control, meaning I'm not going to interrupt. Maybe there's a group in another corner of four or five kids who are working on being friendly. And these kids would set these goals, write them on a 3x5 card, scotch tape them on their desk. And then every morning, and then before lunch and before dismissal, the teacher would ask kids how they're doing. And then they would get together on Fridays with kids who had similar goals and talk about that. And I've heard some people say, you know, that has some similarity to Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's a good thing. It, in the sense that it's taking your goal, it's putting it out there publicly, it's making a commitment, it's developing strategies with colleagues, and then it's monitoring your behavior and reinforcing what works. So again, to come back to the question, self-control is really a function of habit. And my argument in the formative five is that teachers can help kids develop good habits by replacing habits that aren't particularly productive, like those where they manifest a lack of self-control.
Integrity.
Well, integrity was an interesting one for me because it was one that wasn't in my initial list. I mean, I spent a lot of time reading when I was developing the Formative Five, looking at kids that I knew. And I had been, as you suggested, at New City School long enough that I had kids who I knew as kindergartners who all of a sudden were adults, who were out of med school, who were running businesses, who were teachers or whatever. And I could really look at, gosh, what was it about this kid as a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old? How has that played out? So my initial list, I had honesty, because we all want people who are honest. We want to work with them. But the more I read, the more I realized that honesty is important, comma, but what we really need is integrity. And honesty, we all know what that is. That's telling the truth. That's doing what you say you're going to do. Integrity, though, is standing up for your beliefs. It's publicly, it's visibly making a commitment and moving forward. It's interrupting when somebody makes a racist comment, saying, hold on a second, that makes me uncomfortable. It's stopping in a playground if you're a kid and somebody is bullying another kid, when we know that's the best way to reduce bullying.
Integrity has action connected to it.
Totally. And that's something I think that we need to develop in our kids too. We need to, for example, when we look at history, when we read novels or we look at history in general, we can draw distinctions between people who were honest and people who had integrity. And integrity comes with a price. It's not always easy. Many times when you make that statement, when you stand up, you can be ostracized by your peers. You're pushing against authority. You know, the people that we respect most, whether it's Rosa Parks, Dr. Martin Luther King, Gandhi, they all had integrity, but each one of them flew in the face of authority and paid the price. But again, looking long term, looking at what we want in the world and the kind of people we need more people who have integrity.
The next one you have here is embracing diversity.
Yeah, embracing diversity. And if you look at the list of the five, diversity is the only one that has an adverb preceding and embracing. And I did that because as I thought about the Formative Five, empathy, self-control, integrity, grit, to which we'll get in a minute, in diversity, it occurs to me that those other four, everybody embraces, everybody buys, but diversity isn't there yet. And I wrote this in 2014, 2015. So this was before the current political milieu in which we find ourselves. But I was aware that not everybody sees the value of diversity. And I thought that's really a shame and it's a mistake. Because when you look at the world, irrespective of where you live, what you believe, the reality is if you're going to be a successful human being, and by successful, I don't necessarily mean making the most money. Successful might be being the good soccer coach on the third grade team, being a good neighbor, being a good friend, being a good significant other. But if we're going to succeed in that, we have to not just accept diversity, not just respect it. We need to embrace it. We need to look at the characteristics of people who are different than us, whether that's racially, socioeconomically, ethnically, sexual orientation, whatever. We need to look at those folks and learn from them and work with them and value those differences.
And take us on to grit.
Grit is the one that has been, you know, in the mainstream sense. Angela Duckworth's work was promulgated by Paul Tough. And basically, grit is just tenacity hanging in. Angela Duckworth says it's passion plus perseverance, and she's got a long-term focus on it. I tend to take that and look a little more short-term. And basically, grit means never giving up. That's another one when I do presentations, and I've done scores of these. But educators will often say, gosh, you know, that's something that our kids really need. And I think that's more the case today than it used to be. When I talk about the trophy culture in which we find ourselves, where every kid on the team gets a trophy, irrespective of whether the team won the game or the kid even plays. And I'm all for positive reinforcement. I'm all for kids succeeding. But it seems to me we've evolved to a point where too many people, too many parents view themselves as what I call snowplow parents. You know, they're the snowplow parent because their job is to remove the obstacles from their child's path. And that's really unfortunate, because when you turn around and look at people who are successful, again, however you define that success, not monetarily, but when you look at people who are successful, they've always overcome obstacles. And you don't have to do that. You can choose paths where there's little resistance. You can give up and flip from thing to thing. But if you're going to be successful in whatever the field is, it's going to require grit. And that's something that we can develop with kids by intentionally working on it.
Thanks, Tom, for introducing us to these five student success skills. In episode 2,
we'll explore strategies for engaging students in the development of these critical life skills.
Thanks for listening, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley, or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.